Hello, hello, and welcome to Good Areas Live. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter. And with me is Jared Kimber, who you can find literally everywhere. And it's been a hot minute, hasn't it, Jared? I can't remember the last time we were live together.
I can't remember the last time I was live with anyone. But yes, it does feel like it's been a while for us.
Yeah. Also, apologies, everyone. We know that we're an hour and 14 minutes late. It was largely because of that French Open final that you all got to witness, the longest one in history. Alcaraz won it. Jared hasn't watched it, but he was also having some computer issues.
Also, you don't have to apologize. We go live when we go live. Like, the audio people are like, what? What are they talking about going live?
True. Also, everyone in the comment section, hello to you. Before we get into the subject matter, which is basically a preview of the World Test Championship final, which is going to be played between South Africa and Australia at Lord's starting Wednesday, I just want to dispel this rumor that's going on in the comment section that I have cancer or something. I'm completely fine and healthy, guys. It's a very stupid joke to make, a weird one. But yeah, it made for good comedy for Varun and myself when I entered the chat.
It was probably one of Varun's alts.
Yeah, can't deny that. Could very well be Varun. Maybe Dhruv is Varun. But anyway, so Jared, it's been an interesting year in sport as far as trophy droughts ending is concerned, right? Bologna in Italy won the Coppa Italia. Paris Saint-Germain won the UEFA Champions League title for the first time.
What are you talking about?
RCB won the IPL, right? Virat Kohli as well. Harry Kane won the Bundesliga. Tottenham Hotspur won a trophy, the Europa Cup. And Crystal Palace, the club down your road, also won the FA Cup. And Newcastle won the Carling Cup, or whatever it's called today. So, you know, I suppose...
Why are we talking about football here? And also, Indiana or OKC is going to win a title too.
Yeah, so there's that as well. We're talking about this because South Africa, despite having won the inaugural ICC Champions Trophy, don't really have a major ICC trophy to their name. And in a week where we've got friggin', yes, Varun is correct to point out over here, Hobart Hurricanes also won the BBL, the Big Bash League. So my point is that in a week where we've literally gotten a generational quarrel between Elon Musk and Donald Trump on Twitter, is it likely that South Africa can finally win that elusive title?
The bookies have them at a 25% chance.
Ooh, I mean, a quarter of the chances, I suppose. That's not that bad.
Well, it means you win one out of four. It's not ideal.
Yeah.
Probably rather it'd be 33% chance, would you?
I suppose one in three would be better, of course. But if you look at the squads, sure, Australia, pound for pound, look like the stronger team. I do think they are out-and-out favourites, but it's not like South Africa cannot win over here. I mean, they've got a world-class bowling attack. Conditions will suit them. And also, Aidan Markram today pointed out that they play a lot of two-match test series, which means that they are fully conditioned to this sort of situation where they have no room or margin for error.
Yeah, look. We say this all the time, that good bowling teams can win anything. So there's always a chance that they will win just because of that. And the Australian batting really hasn't been all that strong all the way through the World Test Championship. But, yeah. Behram, what's South Africa's three best batters?
That's the issue, right? I mean, maybe Temba makes the list and that itself tells you a story.
I think Temba's been averaging 50 in the last 2 years of Test cricket, so he has to be on the list. Mm-hmm. You would then have Verena. Is it Verena or Vereen? I've always forgotten
it. It's Verena, and he's actually quite a high-performing wicket-keeper batter, right? And then Beddingham was good for the longest time, and he's had a shit year.
Yeah, and Stubbs or Markram, you could throw in, right?
Yes.
But how do you compare that to Head, Smith, and Khawaja?
Yeah, you can't really compare that. Even though I know Marnus is a bit of a red flag in there, and we don't really know how
he performed. I'm not saying there aren't red flags, but I'm saying if you go the three best batters versus the three best batters, 25% seems friendly at that point, right? Like, it really does. The other thing I would throw out there, which we haven't done a piece on this yet, but I was looking at it before, and I think Cheyenne started looking at it now as well, which is, weirdly enough, South Africa don't bowl particularly well to left-handers. So there's a couple of left-handers that are quite crucial for Australia in this lineup. And Rabada and Maharaj, both, you know, not at their best against left-handers. I think the other guys are worse. So again, it's not quite exactly where you would want it to be.
Yeah. Also, there was another fun matchup that Cheyenne shared with me in the chat, in which he said that Usman Khawaja struggles versus Kagiso Rabada in the first 20 overs of a test match. So he's been out to him thrice, and Varun might have the numbers handy over here. If you could just bring those up, Varun. I mean, look, when you've got a battle like Rabada versus Khawaja, it is top drawer, but I mean, in those sort of conditions, you would slightly favor Rabada. Tell me, what do you know about the conditions? June in England, you know, pretty much the start of the test match summer, you know. So yeah, 3 for 48 off 134 balls is what Khwaja has managed versus Rabada in the first 20 overs. I mean, we've seen the surface flatten out on days 2, 3, 4, whatever. But generally, it's a tough toss decision, isn't it? Like, what would you want to do?
So it's been dry in the UK, right? Like, I think that's the best way of looking at it is it has been dry for quite some time now. So from that perspective, it's neither of these teams are probably mad keen on that. You know, perhaps that helps Australia a little bit more, but I don't think it's all that much different. You'd probably prefer to have Jansen when he's slightly older and a little bit more experienced on a wicket like that. But at the moment, you know, Stark and Hazelwood are probably, you know, the more automatic ones there. So yeah, I don't think it changes anything all that much. It's probably the kind of conditions that you would prefer to have. Of recent times, you would probably prefer to have, you know, India. If they'd made the final, they would have probably preferred this. The Oval wasn't that bad when they played at the Oval either. But of recent times, you'd probably be looking at that as well. But yeah, there's no moisture over here, man. It's one of the driest summers I can remember since I've moved to the UK. I've noticed the groundsmen at my local ground are now just drowning the wickets every week just to try and get some moisture back into them. And the minute you get back out and play on them, they're dry again. Like, it's really noticeable how dry it is here. My backyard's starting to crack up a little bit, you know, little things like that. I'm not sure that gives anyone an advantage, but probably, I think if you're doing a shootout, I think if you're South Africa, you'd rather it be a green top and nipping around everywhere, right?
Yeah, of course. I mean, although I will say this, that if it's dry out there, that means that Nathan Lyon probably is going to play for sure. Whereas before you told me this, I was kind of thinking about whether or not Australia can afford to go with a four-man pace attack and maybe throw in Bo Webster in there for some overs of spin. Because Scotty Boland has just said that he is pain-free, he's never felt better, and he wants to make life hell for selectors. On the other hand, Josh Hazelwood, the guy who usually you would think he is a like-for-like replacement for, he's been in the form of his life, albeit in T20s, but Hazelwood has also been phenomenal in this cycle of the World Test Championship. So it's a very interesting dilemma that Australia find themselves in, because there's no easy choice here.
No, not at all. I think that's very fair. It's they're going to have to make the decision based on the conditions at the last minute, I would assume. I was just trying to find if I could find the what's been going on with Middlesex. But for one, Middlesex's website is the weirdest website I've ever come across, and it doesn't want me to find anything. It's actually come up with 25-26 results, which I just don't think we played that year yet in Middlesex. So I don't know what's happening there, but I'll try and find those later. But yeah, we've seen a lot of high-scoring games so far this year in county cricket. We've seen a lot of sort of flat wickets and everything else. It feels like you need a spinner at the moment. If you go back, I know Trent Bridge is a different ground, but if you go back to the first test, Sikandar Raza and Shoaib Bashir bowled quite a lot in that match at various times. So yeah, I would say that's the arc that we're on at the moment, which is, you know, especially for a test match. And I don't know, a 6-day test match? Is that changed? Do you know what I mean? Like, maybe it's even more likely you take your spinner in. I don't know. I don't think we're getting to a 6-day, but I'm just throwing it out there.
I mean, if the conditions from Trent Bridge translate to Lords, I mean, Shoaib Bashir took 9 wickets in that test match, right? I know it was Zimbabwe, whatever. But Nathan Lyon is like the supremo amped up version of Shoaib Bashir, basically. So that's going to be tough work for South Africa, because they aren't particularly a great side which plays spin. Right. But on the other hand, I also feel that Keshav Maharaj will have a massive role to play over here.
Yeah, I think both of those things are pretty fair, aren't they? I think them playing spin, who did they beat? They beat Bangladesh 2-0 in Bangladesh recently, but a lot of that was also their pace bowling, if I remember
Rabada
correctly.
Rabada went mad, if I remember correctly.
So I'm just having a look at the scores here. So lowest score in the first game at Lords this year was 260. Lowest score in the second game was 199, but then in the second and third innings, there was a lot of runs scored. We had another 129. So there's been a little bit of action early on. There haven't been a lot of games. The last game was the 16th of May, but that was quite a low-scoring game. But it looks like it's pretty normal, Lords. 350 to 400, a couple of higher scores as well. I don't have the breakdown of pace versus spin or anything on those wickets. But yeah, there's certainly an element there of this is not a traditional English summer. So again, I think if I'm South Africa, I probably want it to be more shootouty, if that makes sense. Yeah. Is that shootouty a word? It is now.
Shootouty has to be a word. And I fully agree with you over there. And you know, there is one little, plus point to South Africa as well. Yes, their batting is flaky as fuck, right? Like, it could crumble within like three blinks of an eye. But they've got Mulder at 7 and Jansen at 8. So that is a deeper South African batting lineup than what we're used to. And I mean, Rabada and Maharaj can also hold a bat. So it's going to be interesting how well their tail bats, especially like if they choose to play Corbin Bosch, that's an even longer batting lineup.
Yeah, he might actually be more suited to the kind of wicket it might be. Whereas before, if it was going to be a more green top, maybe you didn't bowl someone like Bosch. Look, a lot of this also depends on VR Mulder. They are still talking him up quite a bit. But remember, I'm just having a look now. He averages 22 in Test cricket at the moment. Right?
Yeah, that is true.
I know in first class cricket, he's made slightly more runs and they have talked him up. But he's only averaging 36 in first class cricket. Generally, when you have players who average 36 in first-class cricket down the order, and then someone like Jansen, I don't think Australia has to be too worried about that, right? So,
fair.
You're right, with Corbin Bosch is different. I think he might average more in first-class cricket than either of those guys, actually. So there is an element there of having the longer batting lineup. I very rarely worry about longer batting lineups if I was in opposition, because I always look at it the same way. Unless they have seven frontline batters and like a Jadeja at 8, generally what you're talking about is a lot of players who aren't that, you know, I'm not saying they can't make runs in one-off game, because of course they can, but I wouldn't go into this game going, oh, the problem Australia's going to have is that South Africa has a longer batting lineup. I think Australia should be like, no, we should be able to cover that without too many issues. This isn't that strong. Of course, it could be the Weon Mulder game and everything changes, but yeah. At the moment, not quite the case.
I mean, all of those Jacques Gallus comparisons are a bit far-fetched, but I love the guy's hair. I feel like Weon Mulder has amazing hair game. Anyway, we've got a couple of super chats from Samit Khan, which are talking about South Africa, so we'll take them. Samit says, Mulder, Jansen, Maharaj, and KG are set. I suppose they are, yes, all four of those play. And Kagiso, he's been working on his lines recently, so if you know, you know. And he says, should South Africa pick Lungi for control or Bosch for deeper batting? Mulder 7, Jansen 8, Bosch 9, Maharaj 10, bats deep. Does it risk bowling depth too much? Look, I like the idea of Bosch in the playing 11 because he's got pace, he can bat as well, and you're looking at a deeper batting lineup. But you know what's interesting over here? Lungi Ngidi, ever since he's come back from injury, hasn't impressed me. So he's bringing in experience, but I don't think he's the perfect fit over here. Bosch gives you batting and pace, but the guy we're not talking about is Dane Patterson. He is like Vernon Philander light, right? And he might be a handful.
So the last time I talked to anyone, I was under the impression that Patterson was going to play ahead of both of them. Ngidi hasn't bowled this year in a test match, and I think bowled, what, twice in a test match last year? It's a big call to bring him back for a final, unless you get fully fit. If Ngidi's fully fit, I have no issues. I can't remember the last time I saw him fully fit, though, so
yeah.
I don't know where he is. I don't think Bosch is a good test match bowler. I think Bosch is probably, let's say VR Mulder's bowling is as good as it is. I know it's slow, but I think his bowling average is quite low, right? Like, I think he's done okay so far.
He also plays like home cricket in South Africa, so the bowling average is going to be a bit low, no?
Yeah, but I thought he'd made... I could be wrong. I thought he'd done okay with the ball in Test cricket everywhere so far. But yeah, I mean, you're right. But he is coming to England, so he should also... It shouldn't be the end of the world. But unless his bowling is like a very good fourth option, I don't know about Bosch. And, Bosch is a really weird cricketer if you look at his record. He's a late developer. We're still learning about him. What is he? He's like 29, 30. He's not young, is he? Yeah, he's 30, almost 31. And in that time, in first-class cricket, he's got 35 games with 77 wickets. That's not a frontline test bowler.
Yeah.
Right? And if you say that Weon Mulder in test cricket is not a frontline test bowler, which I think is fair. He's got 30 wickets in 18 test matches with a good record so far. And it's traveled. His record away from home, his average is lower than it is at home at the moment, right?
Oh!
But he hasn't played much, dude. He's probably getting thrown the ball when things are going his way. That means you've got two fifth bowlers. I don't see the point of them having two fifth bowlers. I don't see how that helps them as a team. Patterson is probably the one that makes the most sense coming in, depending on Ngidi's fitness. If they're there, I haven't even been to the training sessions. I might see them tomorrow. I'll get a better understanding. But my guess is that it's Patterson's spot to lose.
Fair. I have more to talk to you about the bowling attack as far as South Africa is concerned. But before that, we are going to be taking a short break. You guys are watching Good Areas Live with Jared and Behram, and we'll be back in like half a minute.
I once made a pair in a club game, which is almost impossible to do. But I have been obsessed with batting my entire life. And so I put that into my new book, The Art of Batting. Being that I'm not very good at that skill, I decided to talk to other people who were. So I hit up as many contacts as I could just to talk about batting. Rahul Dravid, Brian Lara, AB de Villiers, Kumar Sangakkara, Ross Taylor, Susie Bates, Nasser Hussain, Ian Chappell, and so many, many, many more. I wanted batters to talk about how they and their friends made runs, because that is the art of batting.
Welcome back to Good Areas Live. You guys are with Jared and Behram, and we are previewing the World Test Championship final, which is about to start on Wednesday between Australia and South Africa at Lord's. Oh, all right. So we were talking about South Africa's bowling attack and how, of course, you need Marco Jansen for his height, for his pace, for his batting. You need Kagiso Rabada to kind of get something out of the surface as well and get the ball to nip around. And Maharaj is also a lock. I guess Mulder versus Bosch is the real question that they have to answer, because Dane Patterson, I do believe, is going to be important, especially, Jared, because they've got Stuart Broad in as a bowling consultant for this World Test Championship final. And I reckon Broadie's just gone in that dressing room and said, all right, lads, here's what you need to know about the slope. This is how it works. This is how you can take Australian wickets in clusters. It's a very interesting appointment, isn't it?
Oh, it is. I mean, we see it all the time now, don't we? I think we just have to get used to this. People could turn up in Australia. They get Australian coaches. We see it. You know, we've seen it in other parts of the world as well. It makes sense to get those sorts of people involved, I think, as much as possible. So I think it's a good move. What I like about it is that it's them spending money on them trying to win this game. And they didn't always spend their money on actually trying to win the thing before, right? So I think
they don't usually spend their money an awful lot. Let's just put it that way.
Kind of what I'm saying, yeah.
Also, you know, it's interesting because you've got Patterson, who's been playing regular county cricket. He has been weirdly very, very successful for South Africa in the few test matches that he's featured in. And it does provide another dimension into the attack, right? Because now you've got this wobble seam sort of bowler who's just going to continue to pepper the same line and length. The keeper might even come up to him. And it's just, it provides Australia with a different kind of challenge. Whereas I feel if you bring in Lungi Ngidi or Corbin Bosch, it might be a bit one-dimensional.
Yeah, I mean, as I said before, I just don't think Corbin Bosch is really a test match bowler. Ngidi depends on fitness. I have no issue with Ngidi if he's fit. It's not one-dimensional, because they've got, we are Mulder's going to play, right? We both agree on that.
Yes.
Jansen's going to play, Rabada's going to play, and Maharaj is probably going to play. Is that
100%?
Are we agree, right?
Yeah.
So that's a tall left-arm bowler, Rabada hitting the wicket, a left-arm finger spinner, and a little nibbly medium pacer, right?
Yes, and Aidan Markram with some part-time off-spin.
So it's already varied, isn't it? Like, the next best bowler is not about variation at that point. It's just about who's going to be best. In fact, if I was doing anything at the moment, I'd be doing a deep dive into all the stats of the bowlers to be like, who's the best against left-handers? That's the thing I'd be looking up. Because, as I said, Leon Mulder is the only guy that I think is better against left-hand than right-hand, right? So that's where if you want to advance stuff, that's what I'd be looking at. It's quite a varied attack naturally. I don't think that's an issue at all.
Yeah, fair. And I mean, it is a good enough attack to take 20 wickets also, I believe. But anyway, we've talked enough about the bowling. Let's go to the batting. And Samit Khan has another super chat with respect to South Africa's batting. He says, Dzorzi, Rickleton, Temba, Virena are locks. Who should South Africa pick for the final two? Markram's one innings every year versus Stubbs' X Factor versus Bedingham's grit and experience. Oh, sorry. Yeah, I suppose it's experience. Who fits best for Lords? I don't think Dzorzi is a lock.
Yeah,
He wasn't in the team I made.
I don't think he's a lock. I mean, I like D'Souza, you know, been on the record for a long time of hoping he would, you know, get in the side and everything else. So, like, and I still think he's got a couple of years before he'll be at his best. But I'm glad that they picked him and made a choice based on talent rather than some of the other choices they were making before. About, like, they were picking 31-year-olds who had, like, one good year of first-class cricket in their life. Like, D'Souza had shown enough to come in. But yeah, I don't know if he's a lock. I mean, Stubbs has been batting at three, right? So there's every chance that they go with Stubbs. I would assume Stubbs and Bedingham make the most sense at the moment in that side.
And Bedingham has a lot of experience playing county cricket for Durham, where he was also averaging close to 50. So even though he's been out of form for South Africa, I feel like he's a very important player who could potentially slot in at five. So, like, let's do this properly, right? Let's have Rickleton open the batting with Markram and have Stubbs at three, Temba at four, Bedingham at five, Virena at six, Mulder at seven, Jansen at eight. I think that's the most likely batting order for South Africa.
Yeah, I think, you know, I just, what have you, did you see the lineup they used in the practice game?
The Arundel one? I have not.
I just wondered, I did look at it the other day, but now I've forgotten it. What did they do in that game?
They do really like D'Souza.
Yeah, but they had D'Souza at seven in that game. That doesn't suggest to me he's about to open in a test match in England.
Yeah.
Now, they did use VR Mulder at three, which they seem keen on at the moment. Good on them.
They've done that before in a test match as well. I've seen, I think it was Sri Lanka, maybe. Yeah.
So he has played there before. So it's not, it's not normal. But what was interesting is I remember looking at this lineup. It was Stubbs at five, D'Souza at six, and Bedingham at seven. Like, it was a bit of a funky lineup that they went with.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Is the best answer. I'm not actually 100% sure how they were thinking about this or anything else. But what I am sure about is D'Souza is not batting in the top three, right? So if he's playing, it's much more likely he comes in down the order. But if it was me, I would put Weon Mulder back at six or seven and try Stubbs at three again. But there is also, and I haven't got his full record here, but there is maybe an argument that Weon Mulder would prefer to bat up the order and Stubbs can bat lower in the order, so maybe they'll think about it from that perspective as well.
But also, one really interesting thing that Samit points out in his super chat over here is that Stubbs does have the X factor, and you and I have been on record discussing how the number three spot is really volatile recently in Test cricket. So you might as well take a punt on Stubbs at number three. And yes, Samit Markram does kind of have that one innings every year, but you can't drop a batter of his experience and also, you know, a senior player in that team, which is largely inexperienced. And I feel like you just got to take, you know, a chance with him as well. I feel like he is a bit of a lock, weirdly enough.
Stubbs averages 20 when he averages before the 15th over and 60 when he enters after. I mean, he hasn't played a lot. Yeah. They don't have a number three is the best answer, right?
Yeah, so, but who does? Who has a great number three right now?
And it's the same with openers. I think if you're going to go in with one of Markram or D'Souza in a one-off game, who is more likely to win the game for you is probably how you would look at it. And that would that not also go to Stubbs as well? Like, if you take them both in, look, there's a big chance neither of them make any runs. But there's also a big chance that D'Souza doesn't make any runs either, right?
True.
If you take the two risky players in, I think you can have a look at it from that perspective. I'm just having a look at VR Mulder's record, by the way. Like, he hasn't batted in the top order all that much either. He mostly bats five, six, seven, even in first-class cricket. So they've got the same problem that most teams in world cricket have at the moment, which is no one has anyone to bat at the top, right? So, and Varun's right. They had Rickleton at three. I think Rickleton, Weon Mulder, Stubbs have all batted at three. I don't think Bavuma have. So they've tried a few different things. And the truth is, Jacob Bethel has shown us not many teams have number threes anymore. Like, it's true. It's where we are in the world, right?
It's why Shaan Masood has had a job in recent times as well, you know, if you think about it from that perspective. Manus has been in shit form and has somehow retained his spot. It's because of the whole number three problem. But also, you know, there's one other thing that just came to my mind based on some comment that I read, or maybe it was this thing that Varun brought up, is that they could potentially go D'Souza and Markram as openers, and then you can have Rickleton at three, which is maybe a bit more insurance, but then you miss out on Stubbs entirely, because I feel like the best spot to play Bedingham is at number five below Temba. He is a bit more reliable. He's played in England. You want him to face the softer ball, right? Like, there's a lot of pros to that.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, that's not happening. Because if it was, Zorzi would have been batting in the top three in the game. I would... Everyone else, I'm like, it is very fair if you say it's confusing and it's messy. But I'm pretty sure that we know who our... At least our openers and probably our number three is. I think it's the three guys who are listed at Arundel in that game.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm just having a look here. They're really... They're just no one's made runs batting at number three in Test cricket. Like Pope in the last 3 years is averaging 44, which I think is really, really good.
It's an inflated average, Jared. It's a couple of knocks that are really good.
Yeah, but that, you still have to play him. No one else is playing him. Manus has averaged 40, and that obviously, depending on when you do the cutoff, probably drops down a little bit. You've got Williamson. Yeah. Everyone else is basically, anyone else who's made a lot of runs is basically in the 30s. It's been tough. So I think Stubbs in four games is averaging 44. Again, small sample size. You take your risk. And they may not bat him at three, but you can see why we might see something like that.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely in that same camp where I would rather take a punt on Stubbs at three, and that allows me to have a bit more stability with Bavuma and Bellingham. Oh, sorry, Beddingham at five. These comments have got my head in. They're calling Beddingham Bellingham. Anyway, there's another super chat over here from Sameet Khan. Thank you, buddy. Very generous of you today. He says, thoughts on Brevis and Luan de Pretorius as long-term test prospects. Can we expect both to break into South Africa's 11 in the next World Test Championship cycle? Two raw or future pillars of the batting lineup? The first question that you need to answer over here is, can they be wooed by franchise cricket?
I don't know if you know this, Sameet, but I think they've already been picked for the next Test series, haven't they?
Oh, have they? It's the Unless Zimbabwe one, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they've been picked for that series. So, yes, they're already in that. Look, I was big on Brevis getting more of a go in first-class cricket and Test cricket a couple of years ago. So I haven't changed anything there. Luan de Pretorius is a little bit different, isn't he? He's a little bit... I need to see more of him batting in that kind of cricket, just because I've got no problem with his normal talent, but I haven't seen him play in that kind of cricket. What have we got here? Six first-class games, averages 65. He's fine. He'll be the greatest player of all time. 300s and 150 in that, by the way. I like the conversion rate. Look, it's a good start. I would have to know a lot more about that and who he's playing against and everything else. But based on his general talent, I have no issues there. This is what I was saying earlier. They went away from picking players based on talent. They went to picking players who were like had a steady 1 or 2 years in first class cricket. And yet they had all these guys like Stubbs and Rickleton and Verena who had like averages, and Dzorzi, who had these like high years or great big scores or incredible young talent. I'm like, that's the guys I would be picking, because I've seen your 28, 29, 30 year olds. They're not for me. I'd be picking these other guys. And so since then, I think that makes more sense. It's not like, I mean, we're talking about now, we don't even know how they're going to put their batting order together for this series, for this test, which tells you that there's still question marks on this batting lineup. So there's plenty of ability to bring in some of the more talented players.
Yeah, it's extremely shaky when it comes to batting for South Africa. But another name that you missed out over here, Sameet, who I feel kind of gets brushed under the radar a bit too much, is Matthew Rietzka. And I don't know what his first-class record is like, but of what little I've seen him play, he seems to be cut out for international cricket. At least he passes the eye test. He can hit well, square up the wicket and down the ground. And I mean, yeah, might not have a great first-class record because I've never checked it, but at least in limited overs, I feel like he's someone who you could see a bit more of, especially with Klaassen retiring. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, he has played a test. Look, he feels like a very late developer to me. He's 26, but up until recently, like, he wasn't this player. And I think, did he get picked up in the IPL as well? Or was it just
no,
the PSL?
No, so even after the postponement of both IPL, the IPL and the PSL, he went unpicked, which I thought he would be surely picked by one of the franchises across both tournaments, because I was really impressed with what he showed us in that tri-series prior to the Champions Trophy.
I know there was something that he was kind of involved with, and I remember looking him up and looking at his record going, I don't get this. But I've now chatted to people in South Africa and they're like, yeah, he basically struggled for the first 20, you know, 3 or 4 years of his career, and he's turned it around a little bit. I think he's on the list as well. It wasn't that long ago where it was that there wasn't this level of talent coming through. And so this is a big change from what we were seeing of recent times.
Yeah. Also, Breetska was apparently picked by Lucknow Super Giants, so I might have missed that. My apologies.
Yeah. No, I think that's what I saw, because I think when he came up, I remember thinking to myself, okay, because you look at his record, he's played 118 T20s with an average of 28 and a strike rate of 131. I was like, how's he got in the IPL? But when I asked around, I was like, okay, this makes a bit more sense now.
Yeah. Anyway, let's go on another short break. We are covering or previewing the World Test Championship final at Good Areas Live. You guys are with Behram and Jared, and we'll be back in like half a minute, so go nowhere.
If you need your pitch changed, well, NordVPN can doctor any surface to a new location so that your IP address is set for you to win. Want to watch a game on a free stream in another hemisphere? Give NordVPN the ball. Or if you just want to watch a clip on social media that a cricket board won't allow, promote NordVPN to pinch hit. So if you need a VPN, go Nord. Use nordvpn.com/Kimber to get a 2-year contract with a discount, plus 4 extra months and gifts in some markets. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. The link is in the show notes. Protect your computer like a bowler protects the boundaries in the death overs with nordvpn.com/Kimber today.
Welcome back to Good Areas Live. You guys are with Jared and Behram, and we are previewing the World Test Championship final. Varun, before we just completely move on from South Africa, can you bring up the team? Is there someone that we have missed? Is there someone else worth talking about? I just want to give it a quick look. So we've got Tony DeZorzi, Ryall Brickleton, Aidan Markram, Temba Bavuma, David Beddingham, Tristan Stubbs, Kyle Verena, Wion Mulder, Marco Janssen, Corbin Bosch, Kagiso Rabada, Lungin Gidi, and Dane Patterson. No, so I think that pretty much sums it up.
Oh, wait, no, we haven't done Mutusami. There you go.
Oh, well, Mutusami's not going to get a game because Maharaj exists. No. So, bam, that's over. Now, on to Australia. They are the defending champions. Pat Cummins' team lifted the trophy in the previous cycle, or the mace, and now they are back to defend it at Lords. It's a very fine-looking squad. Usman Khawaja, Sam Constas, Manus Labuschagne, Steve Smith, Travis Head, Alex Carey, Josh Inglis, Cameron Green, Bo Webster, Pat Cummins, Mitchell Stark, Josh Hazelwood, and Scotty Boland. The one big miss over here for me, Jared.
Wait.
Oh, there's more. There's Nathan Lyon, Matt Kuhneman, and then there's the traveling reserve, Brendan Dockett. So, the biggest miss for me over here is the Bison. Mitch Marsh was a regular in Australia's test team, and he was even the Australian Cricketer of the Year. And then he had like another injury in his long line of injuries, and now he's just been axed. But I suppose it makes sense because you invest in Cam Green, right? He's back from injury as well, although he still can't bowl. But then Bo Webster is a very fascinating option because he can bowl seam up and deliver some overs of spin as well. And he was very good in that one test match that we saw him in versus India.
Yeah. Do you know what Mitch Marsh averaged in test cricket last year?
What was it? 14?
Yeah, no, you're close, 18.
Oh, okay.
So if he can't bowl and he's not making runs, and when he came in, like, do you remember, I think was Green injured when he came in England, made that 100. He basically made runs against England and Pakistan anyway. No one's ever been able to explain to me why that is the case, but he does. If he's bowling, he's a little bit different. And they remember they bowled him against India and it looked like he was going to fall into a million pieces, right? So he did well to keep himself together even a little bit there. But yeah, I think that's essentially Imran Khan versus England, Pringle versus the others. Bit unfortunate for Pringle there, Byron.
Yeah.
But yes, you know, he's if he's not bowling, they could probably get their batting from somewhere else. Bo Webster can bowl and also can bowl two different things, right? So if it does, you know, if you don't want to play Lyon, you can play Bo Webster as your fifth bowler as a spinner, right? He's not great, but he can bowl it. And you know, you can't just run down the wicket and whack him every ball. Like, he's a proper spinner from that perspective. And then you've got his batting, and he's made runs, and he's, you know, it's a decent start. It's only the start, but it's a decent start to his career at the moment. And as I said before, I'm pretty sure that Marsh only came in because of Green's injury, if I'm remembering back.
You know, originally, in that Ashes, remember?
In that Ashes, yeah. And so they obviously, Green is the future, and Marsh was never the future. And so I could see why they've decided to go in a slightly different direction there. But I don't have any issue there.
Plus, they weren't going to get any overs out of Mitch Marsh either. So, I mean, you might as well invest in Cam Green. But the big conundrum,
like, if you want Mitch Marsh to be your future white ball cricketer, and you've got Aaron Hardy and Bo Webster, Cameron Green, I'm missing someone else coming through as well. Will Sutherland, if you want to throw him up there as well. They've got lots of guys who are either like the fourth or fifth bowler or the, you know, sixth, seventh, eighth.
Aaron Hardy.
I mentioned Aaron Hardy. That was obviously the first guys. Come on now. We need a clanger for that. Every time I mention Aaron Hardy, an angel gets her wings. But but yeah, so I think from that perspective, like maybe it makes more sense to just say to Mitch, look, you got more test cricket out of yourself than we thought you were going to when you're a young guy. You've won some incredible awards. You've had some good times. We really need you more in limited overs cricket because he can bat top three in limited overs cricket and potentially, well, on skill level, he's a better bowler than Marcus Stoinis, right? Like he gives them a real variety, you know, and flexibility with their lineup. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I feel like the major conundrum for Australia over here is going to be making that decision, whether they go with Cam Green or Bo Webster, because you probably want a decent, serviceable fifth bowling option, you know, especially given the dry conditions. And then again, you are sacrificing a bit on your batting, but Cummins at 8 isn't the worst thing in the world either.
No, I mean, they've been lucky for a while to have Cummins and Bosch. Bosch is on the other side. Cummins and Stark. You know, neither of them are all-rounders, but they're both kind of combined into like a very strong number eights. One of them is a chance of making runs. And it seems to also be that when one finds form, the other one loses it. So they've always got one of them in form.
And one of them is a solid chance at hitting the winning runs as well, as we know from Pat Cummins' last 24 months or so.
Yeah. So, and if you look at the World Test Championship, Cummins and Lyon played some pretty good innings. I mean, even Boland did on one occasion, right? So they've got some form in making some runs from that perspective. So that's a handy way of looking at it. And they'll be, you know, it's not the end of the world. I think they will probably pick the fifth bowler if they were playing more test matches, like in a row. But the fact that it's a one-off test match, they might just be like, okay, if we tire out our bowlers a little bit more, they've got time to rest. Like there is that way of thinking about it, which you wouldn't normally have in a test match, right? Like part of the reason you want the five bowlers is quite often so people don't get tired. As I said before, though, it's a long game. Maybe it is a flat wicket. Then it's when you want your fifth bowler to come back. But it's not like a normal test where you're like, you know, so Australia's big thing is they picked four bowlers for ages, right?
True.
And then India exploited it a little bit, but that was over the course of a series. India wasn't exploiting it in the first test match. It took 2, 3, 4 test matches to, you know, really wear those bowlers down. And they should all be fresh. I mean, I know some of them have been playing in the IPL, but they'll be, it's not heavy workloads. Even there was a break during the IPL, right? Like, it's not as if everyone's been pushing right to the edge the whole time.
True. And I mean, look, Mitch Stark, we don't know if he'll be around for the next cycle, right? He probably will be, actually, given that he wants to kind of reach some milestones in Test cricket. But he's obviously past his prime. He's still important, though. And Pat Cummins is probably like the one that you really look at in terms of control and just continuing to, you know, kind of hit that top of off length. But I feel like the magic bowler is going to be one of Boland or Hazelwood. It's just that it's literally a really tough decision for Australia on which one to play, because given that everything you're talking about with respect to the conditions, Lyon has to play. If it's a flat deck, you have to have your spinner. So it all comes down to Boland versus Hazelwood, I suppose. And that's got to be one of the hardest.
Why do people keep thinking this? There is no discussion.
Do you play both of them?
No, it's Hazelwood every time. The conversation is not Boland versus Hazelwood. It's Boland versus Lyon. Hazelwood has been their best test bowler in the last 2 years. They're not dropping their best test bowler for another guy who hasn't even been as successful in England as he's been. So, have I got it here? Let's have a look. Hazelwood, 7 test matches in 2024, an average of 13.6. You're dropping that. No one's dropping that.
And especially after the IPL he's had, although Test cricket does not, or T20 cricket does not translate into Test cricket,
his rhythm is fine. So, I mean, you know, you would take that, wouldn't you?
I would still be a bit, you know, tempted if I were Australia to go with Webster ahead of Green and just have Boland ahead of Lyon. I don't know. I mean, you know, you've got two of those guys then who could absolutely wreck South Africa. It's still an option.
Yeah, a lot of it depends on how, and I don't have the stats here. In fact, I don't even know where you get them. Maybe Crickviz might have them. But I don't have the stats on Webster's spin. You don't actually need his wickets. What you probably need is the ability for him to bowl 15 overs of spin on flat wickets. So not in Asia, but on flat wickets and not go for many runs, right? So you can do that and you can rest. You've got the other four seamers then. So you don't need him to bowl his full allocation. And you can use a little bit of his seam early on in the day. If they think that's the case and that's all they're going to use it for, that's fine. But they can't expect, if they pick Webster, in their head, they have to be like, well, we're not going to ever be able to spin them out to win, right? Hmm. I'm not saying they can't, because who knows, all sorts of weird things happen. But in their head, I mean, they have to be like, we can't do
that. You've got Marnus, Travis Head, Steve Smith, all of these guys can roll their arm over, but they're shit part-timers.
That's a bit unfair on Travis Head, who won a test match at the MCG with an incredible ball to Rishabh Pant, which we all remember. Ball of the century, I think we called it at the time.
The celebration.
Yeah, I mean, look, they've got other guys. Yeah. they've got a few options. You're right. I think they have, you know, a little bit of part-time stuff that they can chuck out there and they can do everything. Again, you're not expecting to win a test match with Bo Webster and Travis Head and Marnus Labuschagne bowling spin for you. But if you pick the four fast bowlers, aren't you saying anyway that you're probably not going to win with the spinner? So you might as well just throw it in and go that way.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we've got Sameet Khan with yet another super chat. And this time he asks, with Stark's test career winding down, where does he slot amongst the all-time left-arm quicks? Not ahead of Akram, but has he overtaken Alan Davidson? This requires a deep down, buddy, but I remember from the top of my head that Alan Davidson averages something like 20 or 22 in test cricket, and Stark, minus the pink ball numbers, is not exceptional in the format.
I don't think Akram is like massively ahead of Davidson, right? Like, you know, Davidson is just a genius, and a little bit like Akram, they both had a huge advantage with the fact that just no one could play them at that point. It's funny that he's gone Akram and Davidson, but like, he's not even at Bolt's level, is he? Like, would you not pick Bolt ahead of Stark? I would have thought so. Especially
in
as
test
you say,
cricket, I would do it like in a blink of an eye. Bolt ahead of Stark.
What about Voss?
Ooh, Voss is also there. Yes, of course. I mean, it's a tough one,
all right?
But yeah,
you could argue that Stark's had a better career than Bruce Reid. I don't know if you'd argue that he's been a better test bowler than him. Yeah, Mitchell Johnson. Zahir, the record just doesn't stand up as well as I want. Mitch Johnson and Stark, very interesting as well. Like, I would, you know, in some ways, Stark has been more consistent, but he hasn't had the great eight test matches in a row that Mitchell Johnson had or everything else. But yeah, it's, you know, I don't think Stark's made massively high in the top left-arm bowlers of all time, but he's also in that list, isn't he? Like, you know, you would certainly have him ahead of Reed, for instance. Would you have Wagner ahead of him?
Ooh, you know what? In test cricket, I feel like Wagner gave us a new dimension. So maybe yes. Yeah. Again, take Stark's pink ball numbers out and it's a really lackluster sort of record, right? It's not like a great record.
But you can't take them out because he was the best pink ball bowler in the world, right?
Or is currently still the best pink ball bowler ever.
Yeah. So I think Bolt's a better red ball bowler, but you know, Stark comes a little bit more into it. I'm just saying if we're missing anywhere else. God, we've mentioned almost anyone who's got over 120 wickets here. So I really like Voss. Voss averages 29.58 on wickets that...
Don't suit him. Although you can make an argument that Stark is fantastic in Sri Lanka. That's also a weird one.
That is, he's so good bowling against Sri Lankans, isn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, you would probably pick Stark ahead of Voss just because he's more variable. I'm not sure he has had a better career than Voss, though, considering the wickets that they've played on. Zahir is probably just on the other side of all that conversation as well. And then you've also got Mohammad Amir, right? Like, I think Stark clears him pretty easily. Yeah. I'm not sure, again, how much more talented he is than Mohammad Amir, right? So you put Mohammad Amir more in that Bruce Reid section, I think.
Yes.
And then I'm trying to think of this. I think that's it. I think we've run out of people with left arm.
Junaid Khan is the only other name that's coming to mind, and that's pretty much it. I can't think of
another. You forgot Shaheen Afridi?
Oh, yeah, of course. Well, we don't know where that career will end up, right? It's too soon.
Also, There's a New Zealander called Richard Kalingi or Kaling. Ooh. And every time I pronounce it the wrong way. And New Zealanders always get on the comments. And yet it never goes into my brain what the right way is. Carson Garvey as well. But yes. I look, Stark's probably in the top six or seven somewhere. But there's a lot of guys with really good cases. Like Vaas and Wagner are two perfect examples of they have really good cases to be really high because of the added extra bits of difficulty that they had to go up against.
Yeah, I definitely take Bolt over Stark as well. So I feel like he's like right up there in terms of like the top 7-8, but I don't know where I'd place him there on, I suppose. But anyway, that's enough on Mitch Stark and Australia's bowling attack as well, which is almost as potent, if not more potent than South Africa, given the experience and everything, right? So it's going to be two really, really good bowling attacks going at each other. And we just have to talk about Australia's batting now. But after a short break, you guys are watching Good Areas live with Jared and Behram, and we will be back after like half a minute.
You say that, but I had an ad ready and now I've lost the ad and it was right in my fingers. I thought I moved it.
Do your book.
We just did that, didn't we? Ross Taylor couldn't see at night or when the clouds were in. Eventually, he had to see an eye specialist who would fix his eyesight. In the 2 years before the change, he still averaged more than 50 in international cricket. The top level of batting talent can basically see in the dark. That is who we are talking about in our new book, The Art of Batting. Head over and order your copy today.
Welcome back to Good Areas Live. You guys are with Behram and Jared, and we were previewing the World Test Championship final. We've had all of our discussions on South Africa, and we've discussed Australia's bowling. Now, on to their batting. Let's forget about the number 7 spot for now, okay? It's going to be Green or Webster. We don't care. We'll find out. Let's go through the top 6.
Khwaja, it's not going to be 7. Green and Webster aren't going to be at 7, are they? Carey's going to be at 7.
Carey's going to be at 7, but you get the drift, right? We're talking about everyone plus Carey in the top 5 plus Carey. Sure. So, Khwaja is probably playing his last World Test Championship final, I'd like to think. He's an old dude, but, you know, he's got insane drive. And he is one of Australia's most important batters alongside Travis Head and Steve Smith. Those three are the three best batters in this World Test Championship final. I think that's a pretty easy claim to make. But then you've got some leaky blokes. Sam Constance, who will bring out his ramps, but that could go either way. Manus Labuschagne, who will block till he drops. But, you know, some days that really comes off well for Australia. And then you've got Alex Carey, who has really developed well these last couple of years. And I think he's more of a reliable bat now than he ever was in the past. So you just look at that batting lineup and you feel a lot more confident as opposed to when you look at South Africa's batting lineup, right?
Yeah, even if all the way through the World Test Championship cycle, it didn't actually work particularly well.
Yeah.
Right. There's two reasons why you're confident. Head's still there, right?
Yeah.
And I know his form's been a bit up and down, but he can win a game so easily against you. Mm-hmm. Khawaja's just found some form in Sri Lanka, which he needed. Smith has been on a tear. That's why you're confident at the moment that not only do they have the three best batters, they might also have the three most informed batters, you know, depending on sort of where you have Varina. And Varane is more of a lower order player anyway, right? So, you know, there is a bit of an element there of everyone who's in form is on the Australian side and they're more experienced and they've won a World Test Championship and they don't have to worry about the psychological stuff and all that sort of stuff.
That's actually very true. Because once you've been there before, you're not as under pressure the next time. It holds true for all sport.
Yeah, I mean, look, you talk to any team in the world about what it's like to win, and once they've won, they're like, okay, we get it now. Doesn't mean they ever win again, right? But they understand it, whereas the other teams are like, are we doing the right thing, right? Are we actually playing the way we should be playing? Is there something else we should be doing? So, look, it's not a good batting lineup if it's been carried by the bowlers, not just by the bowlers being good with the ball, but also, as we said before, Cummins and Lyon. Boland in, at the MCG. I'm trying to think if there's any others as well.
Mitch Stark hitting Hazelwood, the odd six. Yeah.
Yeah. Hazelwood had that partnership with Green in New Zealand when Australia was in trouble. And that's what they put on 150 for the 10th wicket or something ridiculous.
Like, quite a bit.
All their tail have chipped in at various times to be quite decent for them. And they've had to because their top order is not making as many runs. You know, we've got a road to the Test Championship final piece that probably be up on Tuesday morning, I would assume now. It was incredible how often it's just like, and they were so-and-so for three again. Like, it was just over and over again. It was happening with Warner. Obviously, it was worse after Warner. You know, we saw, what, within the space of 12 months, Smith, McSweeney, and Constance and Head open the batting. Maybe that was 18 months. I can't remember how far. But, like, there was a lot of changes. Like, they didn't know what they were doing.
I mean, they were so high on McSweeney, and then they were like, we're going to back him despite these failures. And then they axed him. And then Constance comes in, he ramps Bumrah into orbit, and now he is pretty much a sure shot starter for this final. I know a few of you were saying in the comments that Manus will open with Khwaja or Marcus Harris will open with Khwaja. I don't see it happen, you know. Plus, especially after that post that I saw from cricket.com.au, in which they were like, Constance looks like the most, you know, firm batter in the nets. And I was like, okay, well, that's saying something, right? Sure.
I was hearing that Manus was going to bat it. It was going to open at one stage.
Okay.
I think it was more than just a rumor. I think there was a conversation about that. Seems like they've gone back to Constance at the moment. But I don't know. I mean, Constance opened and then didn't open in the next series, right? Like,
yeah,
they've already made some changes there when it comes to him. So let's see. Again, just tell him he's great, throw him out there for a one-off test and see if it comes off again is probably the theory, and who knows.
I mean, in Asia, it made kind of sense to throw Head in as the opener, and it worked versus Sri Lanka. I got that. But right now, you don't want to compromise Head at five. You just don't want to do that.
They'd already won that series. Not won that series. They'd already got through the test champion. If you were going to use Constance here, I would have played him in Sri Lanka, right? Just so he had more experience and everything else. I'm not saying the conditions are similar or anything, but I would have just been like, you've won the job now. You're going to be there for the. That's kind of the reason that I think there was discussions about Manus opening, because they were like, maybe it's better if Manus opens and we shuffle everyone else around. They're lucky. They, you know, Smith can bat three, and if Manus isn't making any runs, there is an argument, of course, to make that change as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, sure, Manus and Constance might be like, I don't know, like if they come off, that's well and good. If they don't, I don't think Australia are pinning their hopes on them. But when it comes to Khwaja, he's been a very high-performing opener ever since he made his comeback in that Sydney test when he scored those double or twin hundreds when Head had COVID. It was a weird butterfly effect sort of situation, and he hasn't looked back since. He even conquered his demons in England in the last Ashes series. So that big asterisk next to Khwaja's name is kind of gone. And you know what? I don't know the exact numbers, but my memory tells me that he fares really well versus South Africa, you know, as a team. He's done well against
him. Yeah. I was wondering if he might leave after beating India, because he wasn't in great form. I think that I've heard that it's possible that the World Test Championship is his last test, but we've also heard that about Smith, right? I think Ed Cowan said that about Smith as well. So how much of this is just people like us going, this is a good time for him to leave versus whether he wants to? But he was batting poorly for a little while, Khwaja, and he now looks like he's in slightly better touch, which again, as I said, all these things matter, because it's a better batting lineup if it works than South Africa's is, right? It's a more tested bowling lineup, and it's a better batting lineup. That's the big strength that Australia has.
Yeah. Also, I mean, as good as Khwaja has been, he's up against the new ball. He's up against Jansen and Rabada. He's averaging poorly versus Rabada in the first 20 overs of a test. So, like, he's also not the most important player over here with the bat for Australia. Those two guys are Smith and Head. Steve Smith, what, has 4 tons in his last 5 test matches? He's back. Ever since he's come back to number 4 and the opener experiment is done, he's looking like Steve Smith of old. And then Travis Head has been that X factor sort of number 5 for Australia, who's literally won them a test championship final before, right? And I think if you look at all these batters from both teams, maybe Travis Head is the most important one, because he can flip a game in an hour. Like, if he's out there for 90 minutes, South Africa could be toast.
Yeah. Also, he's left-handed. And as we said before, not their strength. So, no, I think there's a very good chance. I think he's got a pretty good record against these guys. I think Cheyenne might have sent it through to me earlier. I think he has a pretty decent record against them as well. So, yeah, I do think he's the most important. Now, he's probably Australia's most important batter at the moment anyway, just because his ability to score so quickly and so violently is just, it can change entire series, right?
Absolutely. And I mean, he's done that versus India plenty of times. Now it's another World Test Championship final for him. He's still in his early 30s. So, I mean, he's like still in enjoying his peak, right? Whereas if you look at Khwaja, he might have already seen his peak and he's towards the end. But Steve Smith is another interesting one who you say he might retire. I feel like he might just go on for another cycle, you know, because he's in such a rich vein of form.
Yeah, I don't think he'll retire. I think, but Ed Cowan would have grown up with Steve Smith. And he thinks he might retire. I'm pretty sure, unless I'm putting words in Ed's mouth, but I'm pretty sure that was the podcast I saw. So maybe that's out there. Maybe it's not. I don't know. It could just be guessing, as I said before. Could have been a random WhatsApp and he wasn't 100% sure of it or whatever that may be. But I think there's a chance that some of these Australian players might. It's an old team. At a certain point, I think they do have to kind of make decisions for the future.
I mean, that time is closer now, I feel. And we've seen a lot of retirements in India. I feel like Australia might experience something similar with Khwaja, Smith, maybe Stark, maybe. There are a couple of maybes over there. But right now, they are the more pedigreed side. They have won before. They are extremely experienced compared to South Africa. They're way more experienced. And of course, you know, like pound for pound, they are the better team. The odds paint a similar picture, 75% in favor of Australia and 25% for South Africa. So yeah, I suppose we'll end this show with a few predictions then, Jared, just to make it interesting.
It will be 1-0.
Okay. No, 1-0, sure. Who are you going with though for your winner?
I know, but you wanted a prediction. I gave you the exact scoreline. I can't give you any more than that.
Can't go wrong with that. No.
Australia's a better team. They should win. Like something would have to go majorly right for South Africa and probably pretty wrong for Australia not to be able to win this match. I think at the moment, where are they? I think I checked. South Africa's at about 4, so at about 3-1. And Australia were down at like 1.35 at one stage to win this, like almost unbackable. I got South Africa at like 4.5 or 4.4 or something. So there was one point where there was just a surge of money put on Australia. And I think that's pretty fair. I think that's the way that it goes. But that doesn't, as I said before, what did we say? It was a 25% chance South Africa win this. That's only 1-4, right? And if you think about Australia in this cycle, you can have the India test at Perth. You can have
the Shamar Joseph test. Yep.
Yeah. Gabba. Even the way they played against Pakistan, I was putting alarm bells on against Pakistan. Even the New Zealand one, they got themselves into trouble, right? And got themselves back out. The entire England series was close games that either team could have been up 3-1 or down, 1-3 in that sort of series. Like it was chaos.
They could have lost that series if not for the Manchester rain. That's what Ben Stokes will tell you, right?
Yeah, no, but they could have. But they also could have won it 4-0 or lost it 4-0. Like they were those games were close, right?
Yeah.
Like they swung on a few key moments. So that doesn't give you Australia doesn't have a similar form line than I think they did the previous time where I was like this looks like a very very strong team up against another very strong team. But having said all that, South Africa's form line is also, it's brilliant of recent times, but I think were South Africa were like 1-4, or I think they've won one test match, three losses and a draw. Then they went up against a very good period of time where they got a lot of weaker sides in a row and they beat them.
Yep.
You still have to give them credit for that. I'm not taking that away from them.
They also dropped a series versus New Zealand. Like they could have fared better, but they chose or selected a shit squad. So there's that.
Absolutely, 100%. That was also something that had happened. So, no, there's absolutely no doubt there that there was a lot going on with South Africa this year. So I can't see you can't have Australia as the favorite.
No, I agree that Australia are the favorites and they are your pick. But because it's been such a weird year in sports where so many things that we never thought could happen have happened, I'm just going to go with South Africa just for shits and giggles. Just going with superstition over here, I suppose. Anyway, who do you think is going to be the leading wicket taker and the leading run scorer? And the player of the match. Let's just finish this up. Give me three names.
Hazelwood. Head. And what was the other thing that you asked for?
Player of the match.
Head.
All right. I'm going to go Jansen, Head and Jansen. You guys also let us know your predictions in the comment section below. Who's winning this? Who's going to be the leading wicket taker, leading run scorer, and the player of the match? And that kind of wraps up our preview for the World Test Championship final. It starts at Lord's on Wednesday. Jared, you're going to be there, aren't you?
Yep.
That'll be exciting. I guess you guys might even get some scoreboards out of it if you're lucky. And we'll be consistent.
I don't think we'll do scoreboards, but yeah, because it's hard to do scoreboards at the ground, especially I'm not allowed to film inside the ground at ICC events, even after play. But we'll definitely do videos. I'm at Lord's tomorrow. I might try and do another video when I'm at Lord's tomorrow as well. But yeah, there'll be stuff. We'll be doing stuff every day of the test match. I don't think there's any doubt there.
Yeah, and you guys are in store for a lot of content coming your way. So stay tuned, keep watching Good Areas. And just a quick reminder, you can also go to goodareas.co and bookmark that webpage, which can prove to be your one-stop shop for all the fun work that we do as part of this team, whether it be written content, videos, or podcasts. And yeah, have a good one, guys. We'll see you soon enough. And yeah, that's all for now. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.